Writers, you may think you know Serena Bowen, but have you seen her in action? Do you get her emails, every one of which is a tight little package of joy custom made for her readers? Or follow her on Instagram or TikTok as @SerenaBowen, where you can watch her show up with even more perfect little morsels of marketing and will almost certainly end up finding a book that you'll love. If you don't, you should. Get all the links at serenabowen.com. Go ahead, we'll wait.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. Try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to rustle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3. Okay.
Hey, I'm KJ Delantonia, and this is the #AmWritingPodcast, the weekly podcast about writing all the things, short things, long things, pitches, proposals, fiction, nonfiction, memoir. This is the podcast about sitting in that chair and getting your work done.
I'm Jess Leahy. I am the author of The Gift of Failure and The Addiction Inoculation. I spend most of my time speaking these days, but you can also find me at The New York Times, The Washington Post, and The Atlantic.
I'm Serena Bowen. I am a novelist, and my two upcoming books are The Last Guy on Earth and Dying to Meet You, coming in February and May, respectively.
And I'm Jenny Nash. I'm the founder and CEO of Author Accelerator, a company on a mission to lead the emerging book coaching industry.
And I am KJ Delantonia, the author of 3 novels. The most recent is Playing the Witch Card. The most recently talked about is The Chicken Sisters. And the 3rd one, which you should absolutely go and grab and read because it's the one you're most least likely to have read, is called In Her Boots. I'm also the former editor and lead writer of The Motherlode at The New York Times and the author of the nonfiction book, How to Be a Happier Parent. And yeah, that's who I am. And where we are in time is that it is January. It has always been January. It will always be January. It will always be Monday. that's how we're feeling. But we're going to talk about something hopefully a little bit more productive, which is this question of whither foregoeth thou and us social media? Help.
It's a complicated topic, and there's so much happening right now that we felt like it was time to address it.
Yeah. The crosswinds, just in terms of news for right this second, are that the TikTok ban is possibly about to go into effect after the Supreme Court said that it was, in fact, constitutionally lawful to ban a platform for the reasons given in terms of international control, and it was not a violation of free speech. So everybody's curious to see how that unfolds. And also, an announcement last week by Mr. Zuckerberg that it's a little hard to interpret this, but the best description I saw of it was in Stephen Levy's newsletter for Wired magazine about how Facebook and Meta and Threads and Instagram are so much less interested in content moderation than they ever were. And they basically said, we don't care anymore how hateful or wrong things on the site are, and we're going to let the inmates run the asylum. So that was depressing on so many levels, because now if TikTok goes away, then their market share is really, you know, closing in on 100%. And it's hard to know how to feel about that as a human being and what is our responsibility around those platforms. And at the same time, just for me, someone is impersonating me on X right now. I tried to leave X by shutting off my account, and within 10 days, an impersonator popped up, and this person is actively messaging people to tell them to use a book marketing service that is a scam. And we have already gotten 4 emails from people we don't know saying, hey, is this really you? Did you really want me to use this marketing service? It's a nightmare and I can't get that impersonator down. So it feels like dystopian times in social media, and we are here to wrestle with our feelings about how to move forward and what to think about all this.
Okay, before we do, if you are a betting person, show of hands and I will interpret them for our listeners. How many of us think TikTok will actually go away?
Go ahead. Well, once you take this poll, I'm going to add a layer to it. There's one more thing that we need to know.
Feel free to add a layer, but anyone?
I do.
Okay, one. One of us thinks TikTok is going to go away. All right, add your layer, Jess.
Only because of the timing. We're recording this on January 14th, and it's supposed to go away very, very quickly, and the last second attempts to change that don't seem to be making much ground. But here's the thing I would like to point out, which is fascinating to me. So if this entire thing is predicated on the fact that it is a Chinese company and the thing that TikTok had to do in order to stay is to put the company in U.S. ownership, I would like to point out that the top free app right now in the Apple store is for a 100% Chinese app that I can't pronounce because it does not have an anglicized name in the title, but it is an app much like TikTok that is 100% not just controlled by a Chinese company, but apparently from what I understand, it is very blatantly a Chinese company that. And it is now looking to be the replacement for TikTok, and it is another Chinese company, the number one app right now that you can get on your phone any old time you want. Some people are calling it the Red Square app because their logo is a red square, and I just checked, it still is the number one store on the Apple
And it does the same thing as TikTok.
Pretty much, yeah. And it's a Chinese
company. Not all in Chinese, which would be somewhat prohibitive.
No, but it is a predominant
Mandarin speakers.
And this could be changing quickly, given that it is the number one app store on the App Store in the U.S. in free apps. But my understanding, it has long been a staple of Chinese social media. And there have been a lot of people that have been there for a long time talking about this app. But now with TikTok going away and with lots of people scrambling to figure out what's going to be next, that appears to be taking over some turf. So what's going to happen if TikTok goes away because it is a Chinese company? And another app moves in that is a Chinese company. I don't know how all of this is going to work. We're just going to be playing whack-a-mole, I suppose, with apps for a while.
That's not us. We don't have to play whack-a-mole. That isn't our problem.
No.
We have to play how do we share our books with people and our work with people in a world where anybody can pretend to be us and anything can go away at any time.
Right. Since we want to do this in a somewhat organized fashion, I would love to talk about the fact that, okay, yes, we have the TikTok thing. We have lots of people who have been creating content, lots of wonderful content, by the way, who are scrambling to get people to follow them on what appears to be the next stop for a lot of those subscribers, which people think is YouTube, generally speaking, because the video content sort of lends itself to that. But lots of people are like, oh, go follow me at Instagram, go follow me at YouTube. Where that shakes out is going to be interesting. But I want to talk a little for a second about Serena's predicament, mainly because I have left Twitter as well, but I haven't left, X, but I also haven't left X because I'm afraid to give up my name because I don't want someone to squat on it and do exactly what's happening to Serena. And I don't know what you can do about that, Serena, especially since you don't have access to that account to make any sort of announcements about, no, this isn't me. So, and clearly no one's working over in customer service, so.
Right. Well, so there are still the mechanisms still exist for reporting things. So my lovely assistant and I have reported the actual account as being an impersonator. And we have reported a trademark infringement, which they turned me down. Even though I have a trademark number, they said I hadn't proven my case. I have also done copyright-specific takedowns for the content that this person stole from my other feeds. You know, they just went to my Instagram and took photos to make it look more like me. And those have gone through so that I've slowly drained this page of all content that actually looks like it was mine. But X doesn't care. And on the one hand, I feel sort of like a nihilist for, well, if they don't care, then how much can I care? And how upset can I get about this? Clearly, whenever somebody emails me to say, is this really you? We say a fervent no. And that we're trying to take care of the problem. But one thing I've noticed over the last few years is how many of my friends have felt really wounded by social media. And the weird silver lining here is that when social media stops feeling credible because anything is allowed on there, then we are allowed to stop feeling credibly harmed when bad things happen. So I feel like my own personal buffer against what people might say about me or as me on social media is thickening.
Yeah.
I had this wild incident that I've mentioned before a couple years ago where I had a weekend where lots of people on various forms of social were telling me to off myself. And that was, I guess, a moment that you could, that from a long lens, look and say like, oh, a canceling moment or something. And before this happened to me, I had always learned to fear being canceled or yelled at on social media. For the problem was that I always assumed that I would be canceled or yelled at for doing something that I'd actually done. And in this case, it was a complete exaggeration, if not total misunderstanding, where I had given a quote to the Authors Guild about a terrible piracy site and then forgotten about it. And a year later, this quote came up in a news item when a terrible book piracy site was taken off the internet. And some genius somewhere had found this quote and linked it to this news item and told the world that I was personally responsible for getting the biggest piracy site on the internet taken down, which was patently ridiculous. And in fact, if I had such superpowers, I would have done so long ago. But what happened was I started suddenly getting all these comments on all of my social channels and in my email inbox telling me that I should die because now college students couldn't get their textbooks for free and that I had, I don't know, upended the universe somehow.
And that you don't care about poor people either. That was the big premise.
Right.
All these people can't afford books, and you personally, Serena Bowen, are responsible for them not being able to read anymore.
Yes. But so what happens when this happens is not just that somebody makes a ridiculous argument and you laugh. What happens is they write horrible things to you, like violent things and things that are supposed to make you feel personally bad about, like that book cover with the handsome guy on it. And just, you know, none of these people know me or the first thing about me, but you still have this tremor of fear and terror and, you know, just disgust immediately. So it was a really rough weekend. But the upshot of it was that the ridiculousness of it really taught me something important about my relationship to social media. Because like I told you, I thought if I ever got yelled at or canceled, it would be for something I did or actually said. And this was so stupid that I relaxed after that. Like, oh, wait, you know, I can be yelled at for nothing, and I probably will be again. And all I can do is be the best person I know how to be and say things as empathetically as I'm able to understand and learn and go on from there. I can't go back in time and worry about a sentence I once said and actively, like, carry anxiety about this. So that little thing that happened to me is going to happen more to others in a world where content is not moderated to be truthful or nice. So we all get to maybe take a step back from how we feel about anything that comes at us that feels personal when maybe it's really just not.
There's one more layer that's really interesting about this. Is a while back I talked about a podcasting scam that was going on where people with a significant number of followers on various platforms were being invited to really big deal podcasts for interviews. And they were actually, people were offering to pay them a couple $1,000s, which isn't something that happens. So if you get offered money to go on a podcast, you can pretty much assume that's a scam. But a lot of people, including this one one content creator on TikTok that I really like, actually, an OBGYN nurse, she fell for the podcast scam that I was that I didn't fall for, fortunately, and they gained control of everything that Meta. It's basically that's what they want, is they want control of your Meta. And so now they continue to post as her on all of those, you know, on everything controlled by Meta. Unfortunately, doing the same thing, recommending things that she wouldn't recommend, selling things, using that as a way to sell things and make money off of her name. And, you know, if the companies are not going to have any ownership over, you know, what they do and how they filter content or how they manage people getting scammed by others, I'm not sure what we're going to do about that. And the analogy that I just wanted to bring up is a lawsuit that's been on, that went on for ages with Backpage.com, because Backpage.com was implicated in a lot of advertising for child sexual activity. And their argument was always, we're just a platform. We have no responsibility whatsoever for the content. And unfortunately, they won for a very long time based on that argument. And so are we going to go forward in a place where X or Meta or whomever just has no responsibility to give Serena Bowen back her identity or to give this content creator on TikTok back her platform? It's worrisome to me simply because those social media platforms are so powerful, and the fact that someone can be out there pretending to be you and selling things is really worrisome, no matter how thick your skin gets about it.
I guess the hope would be, I mean, this is both the hope and maybe the worst possible outcome in some worlds, but if it gets to the point, which we're getting close, where you can believe nothing, then people won't, we will all either leave or be there knowing that we can believe nothing. I mean, you know, we're already to that point to some extent with our texts. Any text from someone that is not your immediate friend is clearly not real. You know, and we're seeing all the weird AI things. I don't know. If we get to a point where nothing's real, then we all just leave and only live in our actual physical lives? That sounds pretty good to me. Can we please have that? Can my publisher... frankly, a world in which my publisher cannot encourage me to embarrass myself on TikTok is one I want to live
but
in.
I agree with this, that if you can trust no one, then what it's going to push us back to is a more personal or intimate or who do you actually know? Who do you trust? You know, we'll have to each decide for our own selves. And I think the filter for that is going to get stronger. And I think this applies to writing in the world of AI, maybe even to this podcast. Like, do people feel that they know us? Do they feel that they can trust us? Why would that be so? Well, I mean, you guys have put in a long history of having real conversation and engaging with their audience directly. Isn't that what will become more valuable in all things, in podcasts and in writing, in friendships and business and all the things? I guess that's a hope I hang on to, that real trust might come back.
Maybe what this comes down to is we should put our time into the hard thing. You know, making a long, hard podcast is a hard thing. Making a Substack and getting the people to follow you is a hard thing. Instagram's not an easy thing, and I'm not saying it is, but, you know, it's a lighter connection. So I don't know. That's one thought around it. Serena?
Well, to Jenny's point, there was this advice that I would hear at every writer's conference I went to, you know, 5 or 10 years ago, which is like, well, you should only do the platforms that bring you joy. And that was really hard to embrace as we watched, you know, TikTok grow and Instagram grow, and oh, now it has to be video and not a picture, and oh gosh, you know, how do we all keep up? But the thing about the joy argument is that it was actually true. The people who really flourished on TikTok are the people who actually enjoyed being there. And you can still curate your own circles of trust on these various sites if you're careful. Meta has tried its best lately to make that difficult. When I open the Threads app, I see whatever is the most like anxiety-producing, argumentative thread of the day. Because instead of somebody that I followed, because that's how they like it. But you can still have a Facebook group where you, I only click into there. When I'm opening Facebook, I only go into this, a certain group or another group where I feel really comfortable with who's in there and what they're going to be talking about. And you can actually fight the algorithms on those other apps a little bit to show you really people that you follow. So if you have to shrink your footprint on the web, but you're more committed to those channels, that can actually happen.
I went over to Blue Sky once. Tim, my husband, went there first, and he said, hey, it's pretty nice over here. So I set up Blue Sky. And what was really interesting about Blue Sky is they don't have verification on Blue Sky. And so all of a sudden, I was being followed by Tom Hanks and Tom Cruise. And all the celebrities suddenly,
that's
they
so
were
cool.
Just following me. It was just, it was so cool. You know, Tom Cruise, he started following me when he only had 7 followers. It was crazy. So there is this tension between, you know, like one of the ways that people could know it was me on the former Twitter or on Instagram is because I have been verified. But again, verification is, some people will say, well, it's this elitist thing and it's funneling content anyway. But what's been fascinating about Blue Sky is that in the first days of Blue Sky and still kind of now, it's really lovely. It's sort of like what Twitter used to be. It's, you know, people, it's a lot of writers, and my content tends to be mostly, you know, writer focused stuff. And it's just lovely, but I have no hopes whatsoever that it's going to stay that way. I mean, if nothing else, you know, my Tom Cruise follower, he may mess it up. I don't know. And then, you know, between that and like, you know, all of these new names that I'm hearing, I don't know how this is all going to shake out. What I can tell you is that I'm, for my own, I think there are some really neat things that were happening at TikTok in the place of, you know, if suddenly we feel like we can't trust traditional media outlets in some cases. And then there were places that we were able to look, even if it was like Under the Desk News on TikTok, and I trusted her for the most part and her sources, you know, it makes me sad to not have those options anymore. And I actually do think it's going to go away. So we'll see. Maybe I'll be the one that's wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Now we could get into a debate over, yeah, you can have her because you trust her, but what about all the people that other people trust who are not trustworthy? Right. There were way more of them.
Right.
But yeah, it's not our choice.
Right.
But the question, I think the question of what is trustworthy, how does one be trustworthy, is really interesting for a creator, because I think it goes to the fundamental thing that we're all actually doing here. When anybody writes anything, when they make a podcast, when they make a Substack, when they make anything, you're trying to put something of your actual self into it, something of your soul, your actual voice. And what is different about my voice from Jess's voice or KJ's voice or Serena's voice or anybody's voice is the you-ness of it all. You know, it's you. And, you know, I know this is just a terribly naive place to be, but it is where I live and I'm going to continue to live. But I just have to believe that as humans, we're all going to know that the fake Serena account is a fake Serena account. That at the end of the day, we're going to know what Serena thinks about and talks about and writes about and cares about and puts out in the world, and that will continue to rise up. Like someone can try to steal your, like, what are they trying to steal from you? Your voice, really, that you-ness.
No, well, right? they're trying to steal whatever trust Serena had cultivated among the people that follow her. If they're reaching out and saying, are you really promoting this thing? Because I didn't think you would promote something like that. And so really what they're doing is they're saying, oh, you've cultivated a community. And, you know, if they were able to crash her serendipity Facebook group, then they crash that, then they crash something really, really valuable that's based on trust. And that's the thing that angers me the most, is taking advantage of a community that someone has worked really hard to cultivate.
Oh, there's no doubt that it's horrible. But I guess my question is, can they keep it up? You know, like the content that she makes and puts out in the world, nobody can replicate. I mean, I guess, yes, in a dystopian world, AI could scrape it. You can't put anything out and have it be protected. When I say that I live in that naive place, I just feel like we can't go there. I just doesn't feel like we're all going to let ourselves go there. I don't know how, but I like to believe, I don't know, that the rightness will prevail.
I don't want to give a piece of my soul to Meta. That's all. That is all.
Well, here's what makes me hopeful. And that is, so KJ and I have both mentored through a project called the Op-Ed Project. And it's a wonderful resource. It's a wonderful organization that was created by Katie Orenstein based on some research that was done a while back on who writes op-eds. And Katie Orenstein is like, wait a second, it's all the white men that are writing the op-eds. We need to change that. And so she's worked very hard to create this group that helps people find their voice and own their expertise and write op-eds, people who are not often heard as much. And I continue to mentor for them. And one of the things that happened is in the last month and 2 months, the requests for mentorship through the Op-Ed Project have exploded. And I think that people are going to find places and ways to make their voices and their opinions heard. And I, for one, am very excited to see where that happens. I was talking to my daughter recently about the world and where we are right now, and whether or not people her age have optimism. And she does. And I think that that's what we'll end up seeing us through. But I am really interested to see where we end up if people are still looking for people to trust and reliable sources for their news and reliable sources for opinions on things that matter to them. I'm going to sit back and wait to see what shakes out, but I'm optimistic. I have to stay optimistic or things just go down the tubes pretty quickly.
Well, what are people going to do? Where are you going to, I mean, are you making any moves around social media, around your connections with readers? I know, Jess, you've been, you know, talking about going back to your video content. Like, what's your plan going forward?
For the time being, you know, someone can watch a video, and for the most part, it's not going to be a fake AI Jess. It will be hopefully real Jess. I'll start like holding up a newspaper in front of my face or something to show the date.
Kind of makes me want to figure out what I would make if I asked fake.
Give me some evidence it's really you. It's sort of like, I feel like the way I show up, and this is about the fact that I know where I tend to resonate, to connect with people best. And so I'm going to stick with what I know I do best, which is video content. You know, I have switched over to Substack, and I'm really, really enjoying using Substack for my newsletter now. That's been really fun. And I'm enjoying learning and finding new sources for news that maybe I hadn't, news and information and opinions. We recently shut down our hashtag #AmWriting Facebook group, which means I get to next answer the question of whether or not I will shut down my Facebook interaction completely. I haven't decided yet. What's going to be fascinating about this is part of my hesitation comes down to the fact that I know my publisher would really like for me to keep my Facebook professional page. But are they going to care soon? if that is going to become a place that's not trustable. And I don't know if anyone has any answers to that, but, you know, it's really hard to see that. And I can only imagine what this is like for people on TikTok, especially people who found new careers making content for TikTok. You know, I worked really hard to cultivate that community, and I hate to just toss it down the toilet with, you know, baby with the bathwater sort of stuff. But that's the next question I have to answer is, do I shut that down because it's not a reliable source of anything for me anymore? I don't know.
How about you, Jenny? How much of your business is still social media advertising dependent? I would guess not very much anymore.
Well, it's very interesting because I do very little content creation on social media on purpose. I fell into the belief system that I didn't want to be on that hamster wheel of creating content for other people to advertise to, I guess. I have the great good fortune of in my business at Author Accelerator running a community of several hundred, I think, well, we have 300 certified coaches. They're not all involved in the community, but a lot of them are. And then several hundred students. And we have a closed space where we all meet, and that it's on Mighty Networks, which is a private Facebook-y like thing. And I put all the time and energy and effort into that closed community of building trust and of making connections for people and among people and between people and showing up and being present and trying to run my business by building a great reputation as somebody who really is caring and present in that space of the people who have opted into my universe. And opting into my universe is there's a very high hurdle to doing that. I have contemplated one of the things that has often attracted me is making a lower barrier to entry to that. But I think because of this fact that we all trust each other because of the high hurdle, that I won't do that. But I have, since July of last year, so a little more than 6 months, I've been in a business mastermind whose focus is on advertising through the Meta platforms. And I'm involved with a cohort of about 25 business owners that are similar-ish to mine, all different fields, some much bigger than mine. And the conversation over there is about the advertising and how to leverage it and use it. And they're constantly changing what's possible. At the end of the year, for example, they said that they would shut down any ad that used the word coach. I guess there's so many scams around coaching. So that was interesting. And there was also a change where you could not use words in your advertising about making money. You couldn't promise that somebody could make X amount of money. And so a lot of the businesses were grappling with these things. And what I find heartening, I guess, is at least in the group that I'm in, people are approaching this with integrity, as much, I guess, as you can for people who are advertising, but they're trying to get their programs or services or products in front of people who want them and who could use them and who care about them. And I find the whole thing quite creepy. How much you can target people, that's basically what we've been learning to do. And I've been doing it. So we're sitting here talking about the social media platforms as a user, but I also am an advertiser on them. And
so how ironic is it that as a user, you are now officially allowed to say and pretend to be anything?
Yeah.
But you can't advertise it.
Correct.
It's, like they're gonna police the heck out of your ads and Serena's ads. And man, you know, you show something that could conceivably be part of a woman's personal anatomy. I don't even know if I'm allowed to say the words anymore. and they're going to shut you right down. But if you would like to say that firefighters are being forced to use people's handbags to carry water, that's fine. We're cool with that. That's cool. Call them Hermes bags. You know, the Louis Vuitton collection of Kim Kardashian is all the firefighters in LA have left now to fight the fires. And you know why? It's because people are too woke to give them money. Okay? I can say that. Like, that's cool. But on the other hand, I would like to sell you a book that has some sex in it. No. No, we can't read books with sex.
Right. So KJ has hit upon a thing that bedeviled romance authors for years, where they were using obviously automation to look at your imagery, and if it had too much skin, it was an automatic flag. So, you know, romance authors started to learn to use black and white photos. And I have a friend, my lovely friend Carrie Ann Ryan, and if I see that I have a text from her, hands down, you know, the odds are that it's some flagrantly sexy Facebook ad that went through that, you know, but you can't show a woman's arm. So there has been a lot of this kind of noise in the advertising market for years. But what happens is that when Facebook had a really bad year because they sank all of that money into their Meta technology, then suddenly they became really a lot more lenient about advertising, and now it's been a really long time since I had an ad declined. So take a little heart in the fact that these things can be very cyclical, and that we are all writers, so we know how to write around the use of the word coach or free or giveaway or you will make a fortune in 2025.
But I had not put together the irony, or maybe that's not the right word, of the lawlessness of the free content versus the policing of the advertising content, and that
so this that is called unintentional consequences of court decisions.
Yeah, but it can't hold though, because he needs that money. Like, he will loosen up the reins on the ads too, until it starts to cost him in other ways. So, yeah.
So the uncomfortable place where I sit is I don't love using social media to produce content, and I have come to quite like it to advertise. So that's where I am. And I just go back again and again to that place that I know is naive, but it's just where I have to be, that I feel like good people are going to prevail. That integrity, people with integrity are going to prevail. They just have to believe that.
I think
that
what we're seeing also is a return of the importance of word of mouth and of trusting people via other people that you trust. One of the things that's been a big deal in speaking circles for quite a while now, especially in parenting speaking circles, is holding summits where the people who are involved in teaching in the summit are required to use their email list in order to advertise or sell tickets or whatever. It happens to be a model that I don't take part in, but it's a really interesting model, because what you're thinking about there is the people you're asking to speak for you actually have some of the massive audiences, and you're automatically getting access to the people that already trust them if you're engaging in this marketing. And that's, you know, I guess only a hop, skip, and a jump away from, you know, pyramid schemes, I guess. But still, what you're saying is, I trust this person, therefore you should trust this person, and here you have access to all of my email list. And I have told my email list very clearly that they can trust me not to ever do that to them. I only send them content that I think that they will really and truly be interested in, and where I'm not trying to make any money off of them and that kind of thing. But I think that sort of is becoming a new word of mouth situation and is going to become increasingly important. But that's just, you know, my take on these things. It's confusing.
It's a complicated moment.
Yeah.
I saw a post from somebody I follow on Threads, so oh, the irony here, but where they were quoting a pastor who said to them, "I would rather be taken than be hard." And I thought, I'm still thinking about it like a month after reading this quote because...
Wait, can you say that again? I'm not sure I understand.
The pastor said, "I would rather be taken," meaning scammed, "than become a hard person who..."
Yes! You know,
yeah, got it. So I would rather give something to somebody who is lying to me than to not be a person who gives. And I so admire this sentiment, and everything we've discussed today is all around the question of, it's so much harder to be that person now than it was even 5 years ago.
I'm going to put down and say, I'm going to put down and say, you can only be that person in your physical life. You cannot be that person in your digital life.
Right.
And yeah, I'm going to be that person on the street. I'm going to be that person to people in my physical town, in my life. Maybe to some extent to people that I know in life, but now are appearing in my digital life. But yeah, you can't be that person in your texts, or, you know, you're going to be paying for an endless array of UPS packages that have been held by customs, which is like, you can't. I'm sorry, Pastor. I support you. But if you do that, you're not going to have a bank account for very long. So yes, be that person in the world, the digital world. I mean, Serena referenced her period of being quote unquote not canceled because, you know, so I went through that a really long time ago for something that I had in fact written that people didn't like. And then I went through it again and again and again and again while moderating the text or comments on my post to the New York Times, which in retrospect, was a mental health hazard that the Times should not have subjected me to, but I did it, and I have survived. And my point, the reason I'm telling you this is that what I learned is that what you do is you shut the computer, you put the phone down, and it all goes away. It's like magic. You go to the grocery store and nobody there is hating you because you shut down their access to the free pirate app, or because you wrote something online about families or breast milk or something that they didn't like. That's not a thing at the grocery store.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it. My hope is that we all end up living more in the real world. And if we could go back to when the blogs and were real connections with real people behind them, you know, that was the moment when this was actually a good thing.
I
don't know. But I'd rather go back to only reality and give that up than live where we are now.
I'd like to bring that all the way full circle to the end of this, which was a fascinating moment where Glennon Doyle, who started writing a blog in her closet at the very beginning of blogging, and she has left all social media now. And she talked in her podcast a while back about the fact that she, it was really traumatic and sad to give up that community that she worked so hard for so many years to build and that she was, you know, she trusted because it simply was making her feel too awful. And she felt like that things had been placed between her and her community. And I thought it was sort of one of those OG blog people saying, "That's it. I give up. I can't do it anymore." And abandoning the very platforms that they were some of the OG bloggers of, which was interesting to me.
Wow, so we've left people with zero actionable advice here.
Yeah, no, we great. Haven't.
Wait,
no. We haven't.
You're right. That's sorry. Action. Oh, no.
Because KJ,
let's recap.
Okay.
KJ, shutting down your computer for the day is really actionable advice. And also, the problem is that this is work that has to be done within. And when I was in college, I had these two friends, Mary and Renee, who lived on my floor, and I enjoyed both of them, but I enjoyed Renee only in smaller bites because her propensity to drama was anxiety producing for me. But I, you know, she was a great person, but I just couldn't take it all the time. And then at some point during the year, Mary said, "You know, nothing happens to Renee unless she tells a lot of people about it." And that has stuck with me for over 30 years because it helps when I open up Threads, as I inevitably will do tomorrow, I must remember that all the Renées are on there. That it it's a certain kind of person who takes to Threads to argue with other people in book space every day. It's not everybody. It's just some of them. So
okay.
But when the world feels extra prickly and difficult and it's making your blood pressure spike, the important work we can do that's actionable is to realize it's not the whole world on there. It's just Renée.
I like it. I think that's a great place to leave this. We're going to leave Renée behind and finish up by thanking those of you who trust us enough to listen to us and listen to our podcast for all 400 and some odd episodes that we've been going on now. And thank you. Just thank you very much for trusting us and with your ears. And until next week, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Pause, stop.
Thank you.